Welcome to the 188th episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast, the weekly quizcast, where two professional quiz masters talk about how to write and host great pub trivia, as well as quizzing each other and our guests on our favorite questions of the week. I'm one half of your hosting team, Quizmaster Lee, and as usual, I'm joined by fellow master of the quiz, Mark Davis! He's ready, folks. He's chomping at the bit to ask some trivia.
It's early Sunday morning, and I'm ready to do some fucking trivia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you are ready. This
coming
is earlier than
EW
we...
EW energy.
There you are. Yeah, that sounded a little almost like Vince McMahon.
From the
I don't know if you've heard him talk lately, but he's like...
Yeah, I wonder if he's just been doing that voice so long that it's like...
I think it took over.
Irreparable damage to his throat.
I really do. I think that might be the case.
Esophageal damage.
Yes. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you? I'm very tired.
Meh.
Oh.
I'm doing meh. Some good, some bad. Let's get to the good first.
Okay.
The good news is Pibbs shirts are arriving, folks.
Nice.
You can pick yourself one up or other merch on our website, thenono.com, and click the store link in the menu to get your own Pibbs shirt. Mm. We also have the No Nonsense Trivia beach design featuring mine and Mark's faces on a red tee.
Mm. Saw team captain Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Hoffman wearing one and looking
proverbial lightkeeper. Is he a team captain?
He's a team captain now.
I'm sorry, Matt. Thank you.
You should be.
Thank you, Matt. Yeah, he posted a little model shot on the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast Facebook group, and I'm liking how they're looking. Got to be honest. We also got for quizmasters out there a Pibbs fanny pack. If you need something to carry around your gift cards or tokens or pens or what have you when you're doing your trivia, get yourself a Pibbs fanny pack. It is a gray champion fanny pack with the Pibbs Dare logo.
Mm-hmm.
And it says underneath popular, interesting, built-in hint, short and sweet. We'll get to more Pibbs in our Rate My Question segment, but... Now for the bad, and I understand you had a similar problem. I had a bad question this week.
Tell me about it.
Well, the question was from 2004's The Phantom of the Opera movie, which I've not seen. You know, I do category requests, so I was somewhat obligated to write a question about this. I could have chosen, another category or something, but it felt right, in the round to ask about it. So I did some research, and I found an interesting moment, which I went to YouTube to watch it, just to make sure I had my bearings on it. But unfortunately, I watched a different scene from the movie that was similar to the one that I had read about, which led to some confusion in the question writing. The question that I asked was, in 2004's The Phantom of the Opera, the Phantom is interrupted, singing a line from which song, while Christine removes the Phantom's mask at the finale of Act One. Now, the scene that I watched and wrote about happens in Act 2. There's another unmasking by Christine in Act 1. So as written, the question has no good answer. The answer that I was looking for was All I Ask of You, which is how he's interrupted in the middle of a line. She pulls his mask off in Act 2. Spoiler alert. I guess I should have said that first, probably. So when I read the answer, there was a high degree
the Titanic sinks. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Shit, my bad.
when I read the answer to the crowd, there was a lot of consternation, people yelling out, and it was a 5-pointer. So I couldn't just like toss it to the side. I kind of had to deal with this.
So what is the confusion here? Is there another scene in which she pulls the mask off?
Yes, there is a scene in Act 1 and there is a scene in Act 2. In Act 2, the Phantom is interrupted in the middle of the line. In Act 1, it's a little bit more ambiguous. He is like at the organ working on a melody, and then she approaches. I don't know if it's that. It's Point of No Return is the song.
God, I love that organ part.
That's good, but I don't think that's the song.
I know. It always makes
when you hear organ, that's I think the first thing that everybody thinks probably.
One of them, yeah.
That theme. It actually happens in Act 1 almost in between two different songs. So there's almost like no interruption, basically. So the whole question is basically botched. So what I did was I postponed reading the leaderboard for the entire third round while I researched the hell out of this and decided on how best to proceed. Ultimately, I found the script And that's what kind of led me to the realization that I got the axe wrong. And so since there was no real good answer, because he's like, he's kind of interrupted, like he's like trying to work out the melody. And then she comes up and finishes the melody, takes his mask off, and then they start into a whole new song, which is called I Remember. So what I ended up doing was I just accepted all three of these answers. You know,
wow.
I didn't accept All I Ask of You because nobody wrote that down. So I accepted both answers. I accepted Point of No Return because that's the song before in Act One. And then I Remember, which is the song that immediately follows. And yeah, it was, you know, it didn't go over so hot, but it's what I had to do. I think it was like my best course of action, probably.
And this is, again, why giving extra information in your question, if you would have said in Act Two.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is I said in Act One.
Oh, you,
it was like a mix of both. It was like a mix of both situations. Oh. That's why it's a bad question.
Yeah.
It's not just that I you know, made it too hard or didn't give enough information. I gave like information about one part of the movie and then also information about another part of the movie, which is what led to the confusion. So that was my bad question. Apologies to the Ollie's crowd. The players over there.
You're an artist,
yeah,
right? You fancy yourself an artist.
I do fancy.
I'm going to ask you this question. Immediately after asking it, I was like, I do not feel good about this.
Something is wrong.
In color theory,
mm-hmm,
any color mixed with gray creates a what?
Creates a what? So the first answer that comes to mind would be... I've got three answers that come to mind. One would be a shade. One would be a tone. But I feel like it might be pastel. I thought that pastel is just adding white. It could be maybe none of those, though. So I would probably write down pastel in this situation.
Okay, that's incorrect.
Okay.
But... But you did say the correct answer, so I feel a little bit better.
All right.
This is from the Facebook or from the Wikipedia page. In color theory, a tint is a mixture of a color with white.
Oh, okay.
Which increases lightness, while a shade is a mixture with black, which increases darkness. A tone is produced either by mixing a color with gray or by both tinting and shading.
Should have known that.
So
I'll be honest. I don't blame you on this one.
The ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pronounce it right.
Your mispronounced words Instagram is just doing a number on you. You're starting to sound like me.
Type this one down. of saying a what, it sounds so open ended.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of those things where it's like, oh, what's not in the box? And it's like, well, you can put anything. You can put a car, mm-hmm, an elephant, you know, like the universe.
Yeah.
So when you say a what, but I'm glad no one got it right, I don't think.
Oh, okay. So that can
the fact that you did know it and you did say it, because John, famous art teacher here, bearded friend of both you and I, I don't think he got it right. And he teaches art at a university.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck.
I do remember learning this in my color theory class at Tallahassee Community College many ages ago. So I actually don't think that's a bad question. And I don't think it's even worded that poorly. I think you nailed it. You might want to say what term is used to describe a color that has gray added to it, or in color mixing. That would be it, probably, in color mixing, because this is like a painting term, you know. I mean, it's now that we have digital art, a lot of these terms, you know, carry on into the digital space. But originally, a lot of these terms came from actual color mixing. So I wouldn't feel too bad about that, to be honest.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad then I you've made me feel a little bit better here today.
Yeah,
I kind of felt weird when I was asking the question. You know, have you ever had a question you write and then as it's coming out of your lips, you're like, Oh, no.
I think I might have mentioned one like that in the last episode. But yeah, it's like an immediate bad feeling. Like, I wish I could take it back.
Yeah.
All right. Well, That's the news of our questions for the week. How about we go over our weekly wrap up?
Please.
Okay, on Wednesday, and this is going back 2 weeks, January 26th, we were at Point Ebel Brewing Company for quiz number 388. We want to wish a congratulations to the Shiba Inu Illuminati on their quiz victory. And on that night, after their streak was broken by just the tips at Ollie's, it was a return to form for Team Shiba, picking up rounds 2 and 3 victories after a first round stumble that allowed newcomers Kick the Keg to produce a round victory.
Ooh.
In the end, it didn't matter though, as Shiba set a final score of 113 points, which was 60 points more than Keg, who finally came in second with 73 points, and Team Yikes in third with 70 points.
Mm.
On Thursday, January 27th, we were at Ollie's Pub for quiz number 389. Team Shiba left nothing on the table, earning 124 points overall that night. Despite a strong third round, Death Stars of the Best Stars came in second with 60 points, while Watch for Falling Iguanas and Just the Tips tied for third place with 54 points each. So great week there for Shiba, back on their game. Next week on Wednesday, February 2nd, we were at Pointy Bell once again for quiz number 390. Starting with a comfortable lead, Wicked Bad Bitches and Hombres found themselves the third wheel of a three-way tie at the end of the second round, earning just 5 points on the bonus quiz to 7 points earned by both Team Yikes and Hooked on Phonics, which called for a rare tiebreaker question. You know, I usually do the bonus points for tiebreaker, but we had a tie on the bonus round as well, so I had to invite some teams up, and it was Phonics who earned that victory there. It was a 90s rock intro was the audio round, so I made a 90s rock tiebreaker question, which
I'd like to do that for.
Well, you know, I make my tiebreakers easy, right?
Yeah.
So the question was, which band prominent in the 90s is known for their hit Everlong?
Foo Fighters.
Of course, yes. It's the Foo Fighters. One team stalled. Phonics got it, though, pretty quickly. While the third round that night was won by the Hideaways, they could not quite reach Wicked Bad, who ended the quiz in first place overall with 115 points, nor Phonics in second with 110 points, and the Hideaways in third with 107 points.
I had a tiebreaker once that I thought was easy, and I asked it, and both teams just sat there like,
yeah.
And it's the worst.
That's why I make them really easy. I mean, you remember, like, I think I asked Fletcher once, like, what effect is produced by smelling black pepper. Yes. I was looking forward to sneezing, and he was pissed. He's like, that's so easy that you like jump over it, you right. know. It like it confused him, it confounded him a bit. Mm-hmm. Thursday, February 3rd, we were back at Ollie's Pub for quiz number 391. It was Just the Tips pulling out all the stops in round 3 with a perfect third round, ending the quiz with 116 points, leaving Shiba Inu Illuminati in second place with 66 points, and Death Stars Are the Best Stars in third with 64 points. Mark, how did your teams do at Nice Guys Pizza recently?
Good. I did not run trivia 2 weeks ago. Seth was kind enough to take over for me.
Nice.
It was a little bit of a madness. Ended up having a big corporate gig that we did for live band karaoke that went smashingly. It was a lot of fun. The team that won was, as Seth refers to them, Clayton's team, because I'm not sure what the team was called, but Clayton, who's been coming out a bunch and playing with a bunch of teachers, and they've been doing very, very well lately, won that evening. As of last week, pretty nice. Bobby Feldman's team, he's been coming out and tearing it up.
Nice.
With the sweep.
Pretty nice.
Yes, absolutely. Or did they have the sweep? They won the first and second rounds. And then they did not have the sweep. The winning team ended up being Wax Me Daddy Davis.
Ooh.
With 37 points. So Bobby Bobby and Co. winning the first and second round. Wax Me Daddy Davis winning the last round. And much to the chagrin of Bobby and company. But
did you say how many points Clayton's team got in the previous week?
I did not. I don't know. Okay. Yeah, those
37 is pretty low for a winning score, but not as low as it gets sometimes at your trivia.
Yeah, I remember people telling me that Seth's trivia, which I wrote half of the questions for, was very hard. And they were like, oh, all our team, like, all harder the scores
compared
were,
to yours, like, that they're used to.
Well, that's
to?
The thing. They were like, well, the scores were all in, like, the 30s. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I read trivia, and Elise and Max's team had 31 points. Whiskey Tango had 46. And Team Captain Matt with 6 points. So,
oops. Wow. Yeah. Tough quiz.
Yeah.
If you missed our quizzes over the past couple weeks, you have a few opportunities to do so. Coming up this Wednesday, we're live at Point E. Bell Brewing Company in Fort Myers, Florida for a no-nonsense trivia challenge based on your category requests. Please join us for your opportunity to win some free beer and suggest categories for next week's quiz. That's at Point E. Bell Brewing Company in Fort Myers on Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. On Thursday, we're at Ollie's Pub in Cape Coral for a weekly quiz based on your category requests. That's also at 7:30 p.m. We hope you can join us. Prizes include gift cards, which can be spent on records, beer, or whatever else you can find for sale at Ollie's Pub in Cape Coral. That's Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. And of course, every week in Cape Coral, you can play Mark's Trivia on Wednesdays at Nice Guys Pizza or on Zoom, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern. Just go to the Nice Guys Pizza Trivia Facebook group. You can find the link for that there. And please don't forget to follow No Nonsense Trivia on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Reddit. And join us on our Discord server to stay updated on all of our podcasts, streams, and events. Join us, won't you? That was cool. We like swapped.
Yeah.
I don't know what you'd call that. I did a rising and then falling thing, and then I held it.
And then I held did a rising and then the, falling yeah. thing. There you
That's
go.
Nice. We should hang on to that one. I like that. Mark, we had a huge bump in downloads last month. As I mentioned in the last episode, we want to thank everybody for their listens and their shares.
Oh, are you kidding me?
But I must also mention, we are now at a viable point for ad reads. But we'd rather not.
No.
We'd rather not do that. So Patreon is the way that you can support the show and keep guys, ads off the show.
These advertisers are knocking at our door.
We have actually gotten some people reaching out.
And you know what that. We say?
I just leave them on red. Nope. I just leave them on red, to be honest.
We appreciate your interest and you're knowing that we are a hot commodity, but our Patreon people keep us afloat. Thank you very much.
We know where our bread is buttered.
Mm-hmm.
And announcement here, if you're not a Patreon member or if you want to maybe commit more than a month-to-month basis, you got a 15% off when you sign up for a new annual membership.
Shit, you gotta be kidding.
For the whole year. That would help us out a lot and to give you access to bonus content throughout the year. And if that's not in the cards, if the finances don't work out, we would also appreciate a review on Apple, Spotify, Podchaser, Good Pods, or wherever else you might be able to find us with a review.
A review or tell a couple friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Share it on your social media. Put a Twitter, tag us in it. Put something on the Facebook and say, No Nonsense Trivia is so funny. Oh my God, this is so good. Listen to it. It's so funny.
If you tag us on Twitter, we'll probably retweet it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know,
unless you use like a bad word.
Yeah. I mean, we reserve the right to not retweet, but like, it's likely that we would.
Please read the fine print.
And we also introduced a new feature this week, a new listening feature, chapter selection.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, let's hear from Fox and V for more on that, who wrote to us via Patreon. Fox and V writes, hey, just wanted to say, I noticed the question section / timestamps and it's slick. Sometimes I zone out while doing chores. It's nice to be able to jump back to the exact point I need rather than randomly seeking LOL. Mm-hmm. And then there's a nice lots picture. There's a picture here, which I was appreciative of because I'm not on. I don't use a podcast listener that has the chapter.
It's a picture of her holding a giant radish. Just very weird.
That's what the chapter selection looks like.
It's awesome. I didn't know that was. So if you ever want to hear us like talk about the Beatles jerking off on a piece of bread or whatever, you can just go click.
Well, I will say it's only to the new episodes. There are 186 other ones. You know,
Lee's got a lot of work to do.
My plan is to go backwards, so like I'll go to 186, 185, that way if
show me how to do it, I'll help you. I'll start from the front.
Yeah,
we'll go forward, we'll work together.
If you're just jumping in, I don't want that chapter selection to go away if you're like on episode 12 and then like we haven't gotten to 13. Right. You know, so yeah, check that out on the newer episodes. If your podcast listening software supports Chapters, that would be Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Casts, something called Antennapod. I need to look into that. Don't know about Antennapod. Castro. Haven't mentioned Castro in a while. Castro. If you're listening to Castro.
It's been a long time.
Player FM. You can use this episode to navigate more quickly.
Cuba's least favorite way to listen to podcasts.
All right. So that's the new feature. Be on the lookout for that.
Holy cow. What a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Big
now,
week.
Now that we've done all the hard work, now we get to enjoy the spoils of some sweet, sweet trivia. Take a little break. Come back and work out our brains. Give it to me, Babe Lee.
All right. Here we go. Round one, question one. I have a question about the state of Nebraska for you.
Okay.
Hastings, Nebraska is the home of what flavored beverage that was invented by Edward Perkins in 1927?
Flavored beverage. Well, that's a very...
It's not water.
I was just going to say it's anything that isn't water.
This might be on the level of your art color theory question.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to have a good knowledge of Hastings.
Mm-hmm. Got a baby in the studio today.
Got a baby in the studio and Lee half-heartedly taps. The
that's my shut the fuck
little
up tap.
Rocker with the foot, hoping that's just enough.
Uh oh,
she's looking unhappy. I know this question sucks, huh? Your daughter is already a trivia snob. I love it.
She knows it's in her blood.
I'm gonna say, you know, the fact that you say beverage, because I know Yoo-hoo is always chocolate beverage. And I think that maybe beverage and Yoo-hoo kind of sound like Yahoo, which is something they may say out in Nebraska. I'm going to say Yoo-hoo.
No, I'm sorry. That's incorrect. Damn. I wouldn't feel too bad. Only 20% of her team's got it right.
Okay.
Kool-Aid is the answer.
Kool-Aid. Hastings, Nebraska, huh?
Edward Perkins. 1927.
Was he a giant glass jar instead of a human being?
No, he was a small pickle. Oh, no, wait. That's Gherkins. Edward Gherkins. My bad.
Oh, yeah. All right. Here's your first question. The music video for I Would Do Anything for Love by Meat Loaf.
Mm-hmm.
Big rip.
Yep.
Was helmed by what director who also co-owns Platinum Dunes, a production house which remakes horror films?
Hmm.
See, she loves this question. See how quiet now? She's looking around in interest.
Yeah. She's thinking about it.
Holy shit. There's like two ways to get to this answer.
Okay. First, I thought Michael Bay. But he's not known for his like horror film remakes. But it might be something that he owns the production company, but he, you know, hires out other directors to, you know, kind of like do the business while he just like, you know, takes the paycheck for being the owner. And I feel like I remember Platinum Dunes being associated with him. And that's like late 80s, early 90s when that music video was made. And that's like right before he broke out as a film director. I don't know. Was Bad Boys or The Rock his breakthrough? I can't remember which one. I can't remember which one of those came out first. I think it was Bad Boys. But that's besides the point of this question. Gosh, I really feel like Platinum Dunes and him are connected in some way. It could be somebody else, but I'll go with it. Michael Bay.
That's correct, Michael Bay.
Hey, all right.
Way to go.
All right.
I'm glad at first I was going to say Michael Bay, and it's like, he's going to go right off of this, but
yep.
You did not. Yeah.
It was when I started thinking about Platinum Dunes, I'm like, I know I've read somewhere about him in this, like, this company. I didn't know that they were known for their horror remakes, though.
They've done a bunch of them.
Okay. Yeah. Like the, not The Conjuring. What was the one? Conjuring's not a remake. There was the Amityville Horror, maybe, with Ryan Reynolds.
I believe that's one of them.
Yep. Okay.
I think they did. They may have been involved in. I'm going to pull up a list right now.
Sure.
But I think they may have been involved in the Texas Chainsaw. Yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Hills Have Eyes.
Friday the 13th. Nightmare on Elm Street. Ouija. A Quiet Place. A Quiet Place Part 2. I mean, not all those, of course, are
remakes.
Remakes. But, yeah.
Huh. Cool. All right. A geography question for you. The Newbie McMahon Building, which stands 40 feet tall and is considered by many to be the world's littlest skyscraper, was built in 1919 to increase local office space after an oil boom, and can be found in which U.S. state?
Well, trying to think of a place that has oil. Texas is obviously one of those places. Louisiana might have oil. You said which state, right?
Yes. The Newbie McMahon Building, the world's littlest skyscraper, 40 feet tall.
Yeah, you know, that seems very Louisiana. And maybe because Louisiana, they have a worry of hurricanes. Is there oil in Louisiana? I mean, there's got to be some. Oh, we got some oil. We going to be a little skyscraper. That's my Louisiana accent.
That's your Cajun?
Yeah, I'm going to say Louisiana.
No, I'm sorry.
Arizona.
No, it is New Texas.
Mexico. Oh, my God.
It is Texas, yeah.
What?
And apparently this was the result of almost a scam. The like investors were bidding on the height based on inches, which they assumed to be feet. Because that's what's standard when you're talking about buildings.
Right.
So when it was built, people were like, what? I thought this was supposed to be a skyscraper.
Jesus.
There you go.
Baby scraper.
Mm-hmm.
According to a famous advertising campaign from the 1970s, you spell relief by spelling what and acid?
One more time, please.
According to a famous advertising campaign from the 1970s, you spell relief by spelling what and acid?
Two things come to mind. One would be Alka-Seltzer, but I think that's not an antacid. That's like a headache thing. So, could be Tums. And that's a lot easier to spell. Like if you're going for marketing, you don't want to be like, you spell relief by A-L-K-A-S-E-L.
It also should be mentioned that Tums backwards is smut.
That should definitely be mentioned.
So,
yeah. I think I'm going to go with smut. I'm going to go with the Tums.
Sorry, that's incorrect. R-O-L-A-I-D-S.
Give me some more. Give me some more. Give me some more. The Rolaids.
There is a guy that works at the place where I work, and his last name is Zolo. Mm-hmm. And so every time I call him, I will think of that song. And I think one time I actually sang some of it, and he was just like, okay.
Not a Tim and Eric fan, apparently.
Alka-Seltzer is an antacid.
Oh, okay.
It is the effervescent antacid and pain reliever, but it's mostly used as an antacid. You pop the two and then drop them in the drinks and drink it, and that should cure what ails you.
Yep. Big marketing there, but yeah, spelling it out to spell relief. I mean, relief is way shorter. Mm-hmm. Rolaids is longer than relief too.
Well, I mean, my bologna has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R.
Mm-hmm.
My bologna has
I'm just
a
saying
second
though,
name.
Why wouldn't you spell the shorter one? If you're going to spell relief, just use relief. I mean, I get what they're saying, but
yeah,
that works better for Tums in my opinion.
To say that Rolaids and Tum, to say that Rolaids and relief are one in the same, that they're in Congress. Interchangeable.
Mm-hmm. All right. Folklore question. Now, this question came from a quiz at Ollie's where I do the category request, and like 90% of the requests that came back were pop culture, either a movie or a TV show or something along those lines. So I turned this folklore question into a pop culture question, but it does relate to folklore in a tangential way. In 1996's Kazam, Shaq plays a 5,000-year-old genie who's released by 12-year-old Max from a magic what? In 1996's Kazam, Shaq plays a 5,000-year-old genie who is released by 12-year-old Max from a magic what?
Surge bottle. I've never seen Kazam.
The date lines up. That would be some product placement.
Yeah, tell me about it. Do you know how much, that's why, what tanked Surge? Do you know how much money they spent on product placement in Kazam? See, he rubs.
I don't think
Surge. Hey, thanks for letting me out. I'm Shaq.
Yeah. All that carbonation was making me gassy.
Oh my God.
There's got to be a Surge movie, right? I mean, they couldn't have gone without any product placement.
There's got to be something. Has to be something with skateboarding or something.
Mm-hmm. Encino Man, maybe. That might be a little early.
Yeah. Surge.
But you know, Pauly Shore drinks Surge.
I do.
You can just tell.
I keep thinking of all this like 90s era stuff. I mean, could it be a lamp? Could it be like a trick question?
Well, I'll tell you, he does jump from a magic lamp to this. He's released from construction, like demolition or something, sends him from a magic lamp into this other object, which then 12-year-old Max releases him from. So the wording does matter here. You don't want to say, you need to include Max in the question. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a Phantom of the Opera situation.
I don't know, to be quite frank. I don't know anything about Max. I don't know anything about... I just don't know. So I will say he's a 14-year-old, you said?
12.
12. His porn collection. He's rubbing his dick. Oh, I'm going to come. And then Shaq pops out of your
Hey,
dick.
Buddy, I was inside you the whole time.
Thanks so much.
I'm 5,000 years old.
Your first nut was Shaquille O'Neal. I'm 7'9", or whatever the hell he is. Oh, how terrifying would that be? If right when you're going to come, Shaquille O'Neal keep popping out of your urethra.
If you thought kidney stones hurt, holy shit.
Oh, this is a big one.
It's a man, but larger than the average size man.
A giant man. A man with size like 20-something shoes. Just one of those feet coming out of your urethra would be enough to split it open like a fucking over-microwaved hot dog. Rip your shit wide open. Sometimes I think about our listeners and how they have to put up with these
things.
They
gotta be used to it by now.
They have to be. Yeah, I'm like the unracist uncle, but just still wildly inappropriate. He's inappropriate, but in a different way. I'll say what do kids have in their room? What do kids fuck around with? From construction, it gets put into something else. I'll say, a teapot. I don't know.
No.
What do kids fuck around with? Say teapots.
A best worst answer that we got was very close to yours. Team Shiba Inu wrote down on account of him being a 12-year-old boy, a magic cum sock.
Okay, well, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's very close to
it. But that's not the answer.
No.
The answer is a magic boombox. It's 1996.
He was in the thick of Fushnikins.
Mm-hmm. What's up, Doc?
Can we rock? Yeah. I thought Putty Tat. I did. Okay. Well, magic boombox. I guess. Did he rub it?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen Kazam.
To be honest with you, I don't know. Okay. Here is your next question. What state has the most lighthouses?
Which state has the most lighthouses? Let's see here. There's Washington, Oregon, California, Those are the West Coast states. And
some would argue the best coast.
It was it's pretty rocky out there. I mean,
hey,
definitely.
Did somebody say rocky?
I did watch that recently. I chose that over Kazam. The Life of Chuck Wepner. Unofficial, unauthorized, biopic of Chuck Wepner. And I just, yeah, I feel like it's maybe West Coast because it just does seem like there's like more rocks and stuff out there. Like over here in the Gulf of Mexico and Southwest Florida, it's pretty flat when you go to the beach. There's not a lot of like rocky outcrops. But it could be, I mean, I'm not familiar with all of the Gulf. It could be like Texas or something. I'm not sure. I've never been to a beach in Texas. Or it could be Maine. I feel like a northern state like Maine, that would make sense to me. It seems a little rocky up there, but again, I've never been. I feel like I've answered Maine recently and it was wrong. It's got to be right at some point. I have no reason to pick Maine over California or Washington or Oregon or vice versa. So I'm just going to go with a blind guess here with Maine.
Sorry, that's incorrect. It's the state with the most lakes. Michigan is the correct answer.
Oh,
Michigan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. And they do have... as we've talked about with the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, that you have trade going through those lakes.
Never forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That wonderful song.
All right. That's it for round one.
That's it.
Okay.
Now we come back. We get some miscorrections.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We got a few.
And we get some no notes.
Yeah. Some of them fall into both categories.
And most importantly, we get a second round of damn trivia.
Right, we're back and it's time for some missed corrections.
Missed corrections.
Okay. Don't worry, you got a track there.
Yeah, it took me a minute.
All right, first up, missed correction from, these are all, by the way, from episode 187, No Nost, Close to Coast, which might be one of my favorite titles because it's terrible. But fun times.
It was such a good joke that I made that no one got.
Yeah, it stuck out. It stuck out like a sore thumb. First, I have a self miscorrection, or well, it's something that I looked up. Bo Jackson played for the Los Angeles Raiders, so technically not the Oakland Raiders. And then we heard from Ed Sakals on the No Nonsense Trivia subreddit, who writes a couple miscorrections and or no note. The Honey Smacks mascot is not Smacks the Frog. It's Dig'em Frog, which I think we've covered here Dig'em. On the podcast before.
Yes.
And the pitcher that Lee and Justin were thinking of was the big unit, Randy Johnson. That was the yes. tall, lanky guy I was talking about.
The famous guy known for killing a bird with a pitch.
Right. Yep. Totally obliterating it. Not just killing yes. it, but yeah. like exploding it.
Yes.
Not on purpose. It was an accident.
Correct.
But
yeah.
Freak coincidence. We also heard from Kevin Hunt, also known as Fade to One on Discord, who wanted to let me know, this is a miscorrection on my miscorrection from last week. Hiccups are filed under diseases and conditions on the Mayo Clinic website. So there you go. I don't know why you would go to a mayonnaise clinic for something like that, but okay. Yeah. Nabil writes, Quizmaster Lee, I believe you were a little confused on the Boys to Men question because they did do a cover of Yesterday by the Beatles. It just wasn't the song that Mark was singing.
I don't think that's where your confusion came from.
No, it's not. But
the song is called It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday.
Yeah.
So I could see why you'd think the song is called Yesterday.
Right.
But it's called It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday.
I do remember that cover, though. That was a pretty good cover.
I mean, never heard it.
They're very talented.
Or maybe I did.
I think it's on that
Do you think they
two album.
Because they did It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday, and they were like, May as well discover yesterday.
Maybe. That would make sense.
It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
I mean, live, it would be a perfect segue into. So far away. You put them right next to each other.
Into it. There you go.
We also heard from Chris M via email, just a few missed corrections regarding episode 187. Lego is a term meaning play well in Danish, not Dutch. I believe this was Lee. And as a side note, Kevin also reached out to us about that on Discord. Mark noted that the pilgrimage taken by Muslims is called a Hajj, but pronounced it Haji. A Haji is a person that makes the journey.
Ah.
Or this guy. You remember him?
Oh, yes.
From Johnny Quest.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Had a Johnny Quest question this week. Elise wouldn't know about that. And also, Justin mentioned that Pakistan was part of the Middle East. It's linked by Islam to the region, but geographically, it's generally considered South Asia and linked to India, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and the Himalayan nations.
This is getting those countries being in Asia has gotten a lot of play on the podcast lately with me referring to it as the Middle East, not or saying that it's not Asia.
Right.
And then using Afghanistan later on and not resending it and getting shit for it again, and rightfully so.
We could definitely bone up our geography skills in that area a little bit. Yeah. Chris continues, sorry to be a constant corrector, but as a teacher, if I get information wrong, my kids will tell me as soon as they find out. So I've got to make sure I know those minute details that always have them wondering, why do you know that? Keep up the great trivia. And don't apologize, Chris. We love hearing your missed corrections. If you hear or anybody else hears anything out of line, of course, you know, feel free to send us an email. We'll give you the email address in a moment. Well, I'll just tell you, it's nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. But Mark, you had a miscorrection from Tim, right?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you're throwing this on me here.
Well, you told me to remind you.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I guess I should have reminded you over the break.
That would have been helpful. Where are you, Tim? So this is very, very long because Tim loves banjos. I just listened to the newest no-no, and when you were trying to answer the banjo question, I was like, Jesus, Mark, if you don't get this fucking question right. And then you immediately said, Tim is going to kill me if I get this wrong. I was relieved you got it. Fucking Bella Fleck. Here's a miscorrection for you guys. Lee said in his question that Earl Scruggs developed a three-finger style that became the standard for bluegrass, which is true, from a preceding five-finger style, which is not true. Here's a condensed timeline of five-string banjo evolution.
Condensed?
Yeah, feel free to edit this how you see fit. Prior to the 20th century, most players of folk music were using the stroke style, known most commonly today as claw hammer style, which incorporates a rhythmic pattern combining the striking of melody notes with the index or middle finger and brushing or strumming the strings intermittently. Around the turn of the century, many of these folk or old-time banjo players began experimenting with two and then three-finger picking styles, which were influenced by 19th century players of classic banjo, which was a three-finger style used by upper-class players and was akin to the way a classical guitarist would pick. This style of playing was used to play ragtime and classical music, and although it had no cultural or musical connection to the old-time music that would evolve into bluegrass with the three-finger picking, with no strumming of the strings, would be adopted by Appalachian banjo players. There were certainly banjo players experimenting with styles that we would recognize as bluegrass banjo today prior to Earl Scruggs, but Earl fine-tuned the sound and brought a level of syncopation and rhythmic drive that nobody had done previously. He also created most of the licks that are standard in bluegrass banjo picking, and he thrust the instrument into the forefront and made it a focal point, as historically banjo played a more supportive role in string band music.
So I guess I should have just said it was a claw hammer style instead of five finger. Is that the correction?
What was that?
I should have said that it was previously a claw hammer style dominated the banjo playing until Scruggs came along. Is that the correction?
I believe so.
That's a lot of info. I mean, that's cool, you know, to know, but
yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, it was obvious enough to the people that got it that that was right, but that might be a technical detail that I might need to rewrite there.
Yeah, he says it may sound like a bunch of boring banjo nerd shit to the average person, which it does.
But it's important for American pop music enthusiasts to understand just how monumental Earl Scruggs' contribution was. Five-string banjo playing was pretty much dead as a popular musical instrument prior to the bluegrass explosion of the 1940s, when Earl helped create that style, and jazz tenor banjo was phased out when the electric guitar became the prominent rhythm instrument in jazz, big band, and swing. Earl's banjo style would be incorporated into all different kinds of music by many different instruments over the following decades. Banjo is literally the most American instrument there is, and Earl is king.
Wow.
I love it when someone is very deep into and knows a lot about shit, and Tim is very one of those. If you talk to him about banjos or fucking boats, you may as well just fucking sit down and grab yourself an oat soda. A note soda, if you will.
Yep.
And listen to him go, because that motherfucker will ramble. He'll be like Led Zeppelin. He'll ramble on.
Yeah, Tim. Banjos and boats. Tim B&B.
We got to get Tim and Joey down here.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you are passionate about something, or even if you just hear something that sounds out of whack, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or give us a call at 1-929-356-6966 or find us on social media.
You ready?
I am.
At over 1 million Scoville, the ghost pepper is the hottest in the world and is cultivated in what country?
The ghost pepper?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an American pepper. I think the guy who developed it has, I feel like I remember reading about him, and he's got like like secret peppers that he has not like debuted, because what he's doing is he's like waiting for somebody else to like beat his pepper in terms of Scoville, and then he'll drop he'll drop the next pepper drop. So I think it's American. I'm gonna go with it. USA.
Sorry, that's incorrect.
Oh, okay. Is it Central American?
Nope.
South American?
No.
What? Canada?
No. Cultivated in Northeast India.
Really?
India.
Okay.
Ed Curry is apparently the person who invented the pepper.
Curry?
Which is a weird thing to say. C-U-R-R-I-E.
From India? You missed the mark on that one.
I don't know if he's from India. I just know that he is the person that is named the, if you Google ghost pepper, he is the person that comes up as the person. And yeah, the fact
is that the guy I was talking about?
I don't know. You're the one who told me.
Ed Curry, breeder of peppers. He's an American chili pepper breeder who founded Pucker Butt Pepper Company. That is a great name. Wow. Pucker Butt.
Yeah.
For hot peppers. That's good right there.
Very.
He is best known for the breeding, according to Guinness World Records, the hottest chili pepper in the world, Smokin' Ed's Carolina Reaper.
Hmm.
So you had the ghost pepper.
I did.
Did you say that was the hottest pepper in the world?
That's what they say.
Because this says it's the Carolina Reaper.
Ghost pepper is from...
This has two sources here.
Two sources?
Yeah. One is...
Oh! You know what? I'm sorry. You're right.
Hey, really?
Well, as far as it being the hottest, it was superseded by the Trinidad Scorpion Butch Tea Pepper in 2011 and the Carolina Reaper in 2013. However, the ghost pepper was cultivated in India.
Okay,
so it stands.
It does, but it's not the hottest pepper in the world, which is where my mind went to answer that.
But the name is a ghost pepper.
That is an important qualifier, but I would I take umbrage with your
amount of umbrage.
Yeah, because when you said hottest pepper, it made me start thinking about Ed Curry. You know,
okay.
And I can't keep track of all his peppers, man. He's got peppers in briefcases. All right, here's your first question of the second round from me. Computer software. Mm-hmm. What digital multimedia encyclopedia was published by Microsoft from 1993 to 2009? What digital multimedia encyclopedia was published by Microsoft from 1993 to 2009?
God damn. Oh, what the hell is it called? Oh boy.
You feel like this is in your mind palace, huh?
It definitely is.
Yeah, filed away. Just got to go back and open up that CD binder that's sitting next to your computer. Because you don't want to dial in for this information. That takes too long.
This is going to kill me. This is going to be the one that does it. 188 episodes. I finally go mad. It's
driving you out of your mind. Yeah, don't go too deep into your mind palace. You may never come back.
I'll never return. I keep thinking of all these names of encyclopedias like Britannica and Browns. Oh, God damn it.
This is one where teammate to suss with would probably help.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
But I will say only 20% of my teams got this right.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if that's because they couldn't remember or if they just, you know, had the wrong idea. We did get a Britannica. I probably shouldn't be talking about this while you're sussing it out.
Well, I knew it's not Britannica.
Yeah, that precedes 1993.
Oh yeah, we had an Encyclopedia Britannica.
Nice. That was there was like a huge volume set of those, right?
Oh yeah.
I bet those are worth money.
Well, they're gone now. I'll say I don't even know a fucking guess, man. The Pocket Encyclopedia.
No.
Wrong.
I'm sorry. The correct answer is Encarta.
Encarta.
Microsoft Encarta.
Oh.
Yep. And if you're looking for a copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica, full sets can run you from several hundred to several thousand dollars, depending on the year and condition. So, yeah. Well, you get some for a couple hundred dollars. I mean, that might be nice, but... Yeah, the information probably a little outdated. You're probably better off looking online for that stuff unless you're a collector. Encarta. Sorry, man. You'll bounce back.
In fucking Carta. At the 54th Academy Awards, an American Werewolf in London won the first ever Academy Award for what?
It's got to be visual effects or special effects because the or maybe it's makeup. The prosthetics and the effects in that movie are just unreal. Like, I mean, you got to look at it, you know, with the eyes of the time. Of course, they can do a lot with like CG and stuff like that. But early 80s when this movie came out, there's a werewolf transformation scene that they show like every part of his body turning into a werewolf, several different stages, just great work there. So yeah, I'm going to go with, makeup design, I think is my answer.
That's correct.
Best All right. Makeup. Okay, cool.
Best makeup.
I got to find out what that guy's name is. This is going to kill me. You don't have it there, do you?
Nope.
Werewolves of London. What's his name? Warren Zevon?
Yep.
Rick Baker is his name. Wow. What a filmography here. Got the TV show Beauty and the Beast. Coming to America. Gremlins 2, The New Batch, The Rocketeer, Wolf, Ed Wood, Batman Forever, The Nutty Professor, The Frighteners, Men in Black, Mighty Joe Young, Wild Wild West, Planet of the Apes, the 2001 remake.
Damn.
All sorts of stuff. Tropic Thunder. It's still going. Tron Legacy. Rick Baker, his name. All right.
Yeah, I'll make you look like a black guy. I don't care.
That was his. Yeah, that was his touch. Special touch.
Whatever.
All right. Now, I have a question here about the show Only Murders in the Building. But you don't have to have seen the show
Good.
In order to answer this. I don't think you've seen it. This Nope. is surrounding the show. Of the two main cast members of Only Murders in the Building who were nominated for the 2021 People's Choice Award for Comedy TV Star of 2021, which ended up winning? Of the two main cast members of Only Murders in the Building who were nominated for the 2021 People's Choice Award for Comedy TV Star of 2021, which ended up winning?
I can't even remember who the hell's in it. I remember like kind of hearing something about it and people being like, this is really good. Mm. And that's the most I know about it.
Oh, okay. So you're really in the dark on this
yeah.
one. Yeah. So. Would you like me to give you the three main cast members?
Sure.
So two of these were nominated for the award. Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez.
I'm going to say Steve Martin.
He was the other nominated individual, but Selena Gomez actually took the People's Really? Choice Award for Best Comedy TV Star of 2021.
Huh. I'll be damned.
I would say it's a entertaining show. I didn't finish it, so it wasn't that entertaining.
I was gonna say.
But I enjoyed the pieces that I watched.
All right, here's your next question.
Well, I also want to ask you something about that quick. Not to rate my question necessarily, but do you think that this question is worded poorly? There was some confusion when I asked it because there are three main cast members, and I think the two main cast member thing kind of confused some folks.
No, I mean, you're saying that two of the main cast members were nominated, and out of those two, one of them won. And I think that, like, I mean, there's been, if you're into the mechanics of trivia and what makes it tick, I will tell you that the Discord has been rife with debate to an extent, in conversation for mm-hmm. sure, about the mechanics of trivia and what makes it interesting and what doesn't. We have someone new who logged into the Discord recently who has been, you know, asking a bunch of questions about what Lee and I and what people in general like and don't like about kinds of questions asked, etc.
Yeah, Noble John mentioned that he was, a student of game design.
Yes.
And is looking to kind of gamify out his quiz night. He works for a company that doesn't mind if he adjusts it slightly. So he was throwing out different mechanic ideas in the Discord, and people are talking about whether or not they like them or don't like them.
Right.
So, yeah, go check that out. If you're not on the Discord, great conversation. I mean, I was planning on discussing all that in this episode, but the conversation was just too big.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It definitely took on a life of its own.
Yep.
But in that, we talked a little bit about there to an extent, you have to know about this show. And then if you do, it's almost just like a 33% chance of getting it.
Right. I was trying to build that short list without actually naming the names.
So I actually have more of an issue with the kind of question it is than how you worded it. I think you worded it fine.
You just
and I don't really have an issue with it at all. But
right.
If I had an issue with something, because there's definitely trivia to this, mm-hmm. you could just know it. And if you don't know the answer, you could know the show. But it's the same reason that I have trouble with themed trivia in general, is that whenever someone said, whenever you do your trivia and you say, question, here's a question about this TV show, I'm like, well, I've never seen a TV show, so
yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Now, if there was something else in there that says, you know, who also starred in these movies or something, so I can get there even though I haven't seen the show, then game on. But if it's just related to the TV show and I've never seen the show, then it's like, well, I may as well go take a piss break because yeah. I don't know what the show is. I don't know, you know, whatever.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I when you mentioned Steve Martin, I was like, oh yeah, I did. And Steve Martin was the name I remember most hearing related to it. That's why I picked him. I was like, fuck it.
Another banjo player.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Here is your next question. Born Leslie Lynch King, who was the first American president to appear on the cover of People magazine?
This is scratching my brain. And I think it's, yeah, this was a president who maybe took his stepfather's name. Leslie Lynch King. But the first name is different too. Well, People magazine, that's what you said, right? People magazine.
Mm-hmm.
First president to appear on the cover of People magazine. Maybe it's Barack Obama. I know People's been around for a while, but I don't think it's been around for that long. And they don't typically put presidents on the cover. Is that his birth name? Leslie Lynch King? The other name that came into my mind first, actually, was Lyndon B. Johnson. I don't know if it's him, but I feel like this is the part that I'm talking about. Like, there was a president who changed their name, and I feel like it's more of that era, but I'm going to risk embarrassment here and say Barack Obama.
Sorry, that's incorrect. Leslie Lynch King Jr. was also known as Gerald Rudolph Ford Jr. Gerald Ford.
I knew that. That's, I should have, yeah, I mean.
It's my Encarta.
Okay, my last question of the round for you. Fiber arts. Got an arts question for you now.
Great. Fiber arts.
Yeah. You know what that is?
I'm guessing it's like weaving and stuff.
Yeah, textiles, that kind of thing. What type of fiber art is made by knotting threads or cords into a geometric pattern and whose name comes from the 13th century Arabic word for fringe? What type of fiber art is made by knotting threads or cords into a geometric pattern and whose name comes from the 13th century Arabic word for fringe? So this is a knotty fiber art.
Well, this makes me, let me, a quick aside. I've always loved Antiques Roadshow.
Mm-hmm.
PBS shit is just the greatest. And Antiques Roadshow is so great in part because it's like reality TV, like to the nth degree. Mm-hmm. It's the reality TV I like.
Right. Not the scripted reality TV.
No.
This is,
and not even like scripted reality TV, but reality TV that's set up to be, you know, insane.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, this is reality.
That's what I mean by scripted. It's like, you know, Real Housewives and Nanny 911 or whatever.
Well, or like Real World, where it's like 500,000 people applied for this, but people like you that would just be like, yeah, I'll probably just like hang out in my room and, you know, chill. They're like, well, we can't use you.
Right.
And then someone comes in and is like, I just got out of jail and I'm very fucking horny and I'm ready to murder somebody. It's like, you're in. Like, yeah. Picking and choosing to, this is like, I'm sure, you know, there are obviously things that come in where people are just like, this is not worth as much as you thought. That's the end.
They do. I was going to say they do that to a degree with Antiques Roadshow, but it's not sensationalized.
Yeah.
You know,
and yeah, I mean, like the people are bringing in stuff that they don't know how much it's worth and then finding out and like fainting. Anyway,
more compelling.
Seth sent me one where this person had a first generation Navajo blanket.
Yeah.
And the guy is like, did you notice when you showed me this that like I stopped breathing? And the guy was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, this is like, this should be hung in a museum. And he's like, oh, I had it like folded up at the foot of my bed. Like I like threw this on when it got chilly out. And it's like, this was made by like the first fucking American people.
It belongs in a museum.
And then they show it, they do an update, and they show it hanging in a fucking museum.
Yeah. Yep.
It's crazy. It's insane.
Yep.
It's just in some dude's house.
It makes and you what wonder, if he didn't go to Antiques Roadshow?
Right. He says, oh, just fucking, you know, give it to someone at Goodwill. You know, it would have just gotten like folded up. And like if when he died, it just ended up in Goodwill or whatever.
That has probably happened so many times.
There was another woman who had a painting that she got at a fucking thrift store or whatever. Mm-hmm. Ended up being painted by some fucking woman that was like famous and was worth like thousands and thousands of dollars, like $20,000.
Yeah.
And they do a little thing now at the end where it's like, tell us about your experience. And she's like, my husband always gave me a hard time about going thrift shopping, going thrift shopping. And now he lets me buy whatever I want.
Right.
It's like, ew. Yeah.
If they ever come through, I need to go up there. I've got some suspicious items that I wonder. Do you have anything that you would bring?
I think so.
We should go. Stuff. If they come through, we need to make a thing of it.
I would do that.
Yeah.
All the new season stuff has all been really, really outstanding. Very interesting. A lot of art stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff that I think you'd find really interesting because there's lots of art, whether like the person knew the artist or is just like something they found or whatever. Just crazy, crazy. And you learn so much.
Yeah.
Like it's, I don't know. It's great. Shout
out to the producers on that show.
Oh, for sure. Shout out to PBS. Whose question is it? What's happening?
What type of fiber art?
Oh,
yeah. It's made by knotting threads or cords into a geometric pattern and whose name comes from the 13th century Arabic word for fringe.
I have no idea. Geometric pattern. Let me hear it one more time.
What type of fiber art is made by knotting threads or cords into a geometric pattern and whose name comes from the 13th century Arabic word for fringe?
I don't even know if I know like the right way to answer this question. What art is created by knotting threads? Well, it can't be crochet because that's French.
I had a problem question with crochet recently. I asked about crochet and I called it a fabric.
Ooh.
And really crochet is like the process to create it.
Yeah.
I looked it up though. I mean, I feel like it could loosely be considered a fabric, but it's not worth fighting for, you know, like it was a diversion in the sus, kind of like the question that you just asked me where the hottest pepper got me thinking about one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those because they were like thinking like it's tulle, you know, or tulle, which is a type of fabric, but it doesn't translate to small hook in French like crochet does.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I asked a question that was a little problematic too, to someone on Zoom.
We're just letting it all hang out here.
Yeah,
here's exactly. All our bad questions.
This is how bad it's been. What bank's name is a combination of the two banks that merged in 1909 to form it?
Is it Fifth Third Bank?
It is.
Is this Fifth Bank and Third Bank?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Now
I'm giving myself one of those.
I asked this and Lisa Whiskey Tango goes, what's Fifth Third Bank?
Ooh, yeah.
And then I realized, it's in a lot of places, but it's not where she is.
Mm.
So because it's not a nationwide bank, like Wells Fargo, I think she guessed, a lot of people guess Wells Fargo.
Mm, yep.
But she was like, I've never heard of Fifth Third. And it's like, fuck, well, God damn it.
Yeah.
Like here, it's a good question. Mm-hmm. But when you're thinking, you know,
nationally,
when you're thinking nationally or worldly,
mm-hmm.
You know, I had my friend Vanessa playing that, you know, played it from Canada, which Canada's going through some rough shit, y'all.
Mm.
Canada is going through some very American stuff. All these truckers that are against mask mandates and lockdowns that are driving around, bringing about like a lot of like white nationalism and stuff.
Mm.
It is very, very fucking terrible. If you're in Canada, fucking Bless you. Jesus Christ, what a disaster.
Fiber arts.
What would you call it? Knotting. I don't know, man. Weaving.
No. From the Arabic migrama, macrame. Macrame is the answer I'm looking for.
Okay.
Actually, half of my teams got that right.
Wow.
So got some artists, I guess, in the
artists in the house.
Team league.
Yeah.
All right, that's the third one for me, which means it's the third one for you as well.
I don't even know.
You started, so if I read my third, then you got to be done, which means it's time for a break.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do that.
We're back. It's time for a rate my question.
Jazz hands.
Oh yeah. We got one here from Ian. Ian writes, "Hey guys, I heard this on another podcast and had to try and make it into a question. Known as the Pentathlon of the Muses, what international competition initially awarded medals in sculpting, painting, architecture, literature, and music until 1948 when it was dropped? Thanks for making my Mondays a little easier, Ian."
Just a little?
I'll take it.
I'm just kidding.
I'll take it. Known as the Pentathlon of the Muses, what international competition initially awarded medals in sculpting, painting, architecture, literature, and music until 1948 when it was dropped? I know in art, usually paintings are awarded ribbons in competitions, but they were doling out medals here. Kind of like an art Olympics. Huh? Yeah, I don't even know what a pentathlon is. Pent? Five?
Yeah.
So like a five-category competition. We've got sculpting, painting, architecture, literature, and music. That's five. I will say, as far as international art competitions go, I know that a big one is like an art fair. I'm not sure if it's competition based, but I'm sure they award prizes at the fair, called the Venice Biennale, which is every 2 years.
Hmm.
You can go to Venice, Italy, show off your art. And I don't think I've heard of them doing music, but if music was dropped in 1948, then that would make sense. What else is there? There's the Pulitzer, which is mostly writing based, I think. There's Nobel, which is, you know, outside of the arts. It's more of a cultural societal thing.
Right.
There's Art Basel in Miami, which is international, even though it's here in the States. But I think that was inspired by the Venice Biennale. I think that predates it. Do you have any guesses?
Yeah, read it one more time.
Known as the Pentathlon of Muses, what international competition initially awarded medals in sculpting, painting, architecture, literature, and music until 1948 when it was dropped?
1948.
Mm-hmm.
When it was dropped, what was dropped?
I'm assuming music, the way that this is written. There's no is there's no parentheses around until 1948 when it was dropped. I would probably put some parentheses there just to tie it to music.
Yeah.
Because as it is, it's ambiguous. It seems like, are all these dropped? But because it says it, I'm assuming it's the last one mentioned.
Yeah. Pentathlon. So now it's a quadathlon. And originally gave medals. So they don't give medals anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're the art guy.
It's true.
Pulitzer Prize. What is the Pulitzer for?
I thought that was for like journalism and writing.
Okay, yeah,
writing
yeah,
in
yeah.
general.
Yeah, but not for the other stuff. Um, Man, I don't know. It's a tough one. I don't know, man. I would say Pulitzer Prize is the only thing I can think of that makes sense, but it doesn't have that other stuff. I don't know any award. I don't know anything that gives award money for or gives an award for art and writing altogether.
Yeah, literature is kind of sticks out. I'm not sure about the Venice Biennale in that sense either. I don't know if I've ever heard of, like,
maybe the Pulitzer Prize does give awards for the other stuff. It's just not very well known.
I got the Pulitzer in architecture. I got the Pulitzer in painting. I don't know. I mean, it's possible, but as an artist, I don't know if I've ever heard that.
I don't think I have either, but I mean, what other thing have you heard that someone got the Pulitzer or got an award for both architecture, or, you know, mm-hmm. someone got it in architecture, someone got it in literature.
The Pritzker Prize is what's given to architecture. I mean, it's not that maybe it's not the only architecture award, right. But it's probably in between Pulitzer and Venice Biennale. You know, it's like,
yeah, I've never Pulitzer's heard of the Venice
too,
thing.
Too so. Obvious. The Venice is a little obscure.
Yeah, I don't think it's Art Basel. I think that's mostly art and not literature and stuff.
Yep.
Until
the Caldecott. That's like a children's book competition, right?
I've never heard of that.
Oh, you never read the Caldecott books? Mm-mm. That's why you don't read. You didn't read the Caldecott books when you were a little kid.
Yeah, that's why.
You missed all the good stuff.
It also makes me fall asleep.
Let's just go with the Venice Biennale.
Okay.
We're probably wrong, but
we'll say Venice Biennale. Biennale.
Well, this is surprising. We were wrong. That's not the surprising part.
No.
Art competitions at the Summer Olympics.
Wow.
Art competitions formed part of the modern Olympic Games during its early years from 1912 to 1948. Competitions were part of the original intention of the Olympic movement's founder, Pierre de Fredy, Baron de Corbeton. Uh-huh. Medals were awarded for works of art inspired by sport, divided into five categories: architecture, literature, music, painting, and sculpture. The juried art competitions were abandoned in 1954 because artists were considered to be professionals, while Olympic athletes were required to be amateurs. Since 1956, the Olympic cultural program has taken their place.
Damn. That is fucking surprising. So were all of them dropped together?
Well, that's the confusing thing here. It says that the art competitions formed part of it from 1912 to 1948. To me, that implies that all of them are gone. But then it says the juried art competitions were abandoned in 1954. So they were included until 1948, and then they decided to do away with them, and then they were re-included or reinstated at the 1952 Summer Olympics in Helsinki, and then they were once again debated and rejected in 1954. So, this question, the way that it's worded, I'm not pleased. Because it makes it sound like it's still going on and music was dropped in 1948 and the others are still going. So I think the end needs a little bit of a rewrite. Again, I was going to say I would say when they were dropped, maybe, instead of when it was dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it is referring to the international competition itself. So, I mean, it is grammatically correct, but it seems a little written to be a little confusing. Let's see here. Popular. I'm going to give this a lowercase p. It's not the most popular thing in the world, but the fact that it's associated with the Olympics, which are very popular, I have to give it a little credit there, because mm-hmm. if you're an Olympic buff, you might know this right out of the gate. Big capital I. This is interesting. Okay. I've never heard this before. Yeah. And I feel like that's interesting. I'm also going to give this a capital B, even though it wasn't obvious to us from the outset, giving out medals. That is pretty telling of the Olympics.
It
it's
is.
Not the only one. I should give it a lowercase b?
No. Do your thing. This is
be,
you, Daddy.
I might be feeling, this is like in between lower. It's a B. It's a solid B. I'm not sure if it's uppercase or lowercase, but what do you think about that? Is medals a big hint, or is medals not enough and just
it's
covering your ass?
It's the question is worded so poorly. The medal hint is great if you use it correctly. But there's something about the ambiguity of how this question is worded that the whole problem is the when it was dropped thing.
Yeah, it maybe just saying when the competition was dropped.
Yes, because it sounds like from the question that from what I gathered was this is a thing that still goes on.
Mm-hmm.
They used to give medals. Now they don't give medals anymore. Music was dropped.
Right. That's exactly how I interpreted it too.
Medals were provided for these things until all of these things were taken off of the thing. Mm-hmm. Now, if it was worded like that, it makes the question easier a little bit. And the built-in hint is a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that we both interpreted the question makes it harder, and that the medals thing is not a good hint because you're going, well, what did they give medals for but don't give medals for anymore? That's not the Olympics,
right?
Because they still give medals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there's such a great question in here.
Yeah,
it was just we either interpreted it completely wrong, and you know, we dropped the ball, or the question was worded poorly, or a little bit of both.
Yeah, I would say as quiz writers, you want to write a question so that it's the least likely to be confusing, which is kind of why I was going over the only murders in the building question with you, the Phantom of the Opera question earlier. Like, those are not ideal, you know, in their current form. Even if they are fair, they're not ideal, and that's what we're looking for here in the PIBS. I want to give this an S, because it's short. I wouldn't say it's sweet because it needs a rewrite. And I agree. I think it just needs like pretty much a total restructuring here just to clarify that point. So I'm just going to give this a PIB. Lowercase P, capital I, capital B.
No.
Yeah, it's just not sweet enough. Is it short enough? Yes, but I feel like it might be longer if you include more words and stuff. So I just can't rate it on that scale in its current form.
I think that the interest in it, you know, I would almost give this an S just because this question's so interesting that.
Well, that's the domain of the eye, though. You know, we give it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like sometimes the interest of a question makes it so the short and sweet is tough to do. And you and I have gone back and forth about this. We don't need to do it again. But like, if you could structure this question and it added a sentence to it, but it made it so everything rounded up perfectly, then we'd be in good.
Yeah.
We'd be in good standing.
It's only too long if there's a bunch of extra junk in it that's not necessary. But if you're writing a very economic, efficient question that only has the information that you need, without a bunch of bullshit, flowery jokes and stuff like that, I think that would be, we could still give it an S, even if it was a few words longer. I don't even know if you need a whole sentence, but definitely a few extra words.
Yeah. I mean, there's really not a whole lot, you know, there's a really good question in here. Mm-hmm. I would give it a B+, A-. That has the ability to be, there's an A+ in there.
Yeah.
It's just a little too clunky and a little worded, just a little too funkily.
Yeah. Thank you for the interesting question, yes. Ian. And if you'd like to write us with a rate my question, a missed correction, or even just a little no note, nononsensetrivia@gmail.com is the email address. Or you could give us a call. We haven't had a call in rate my question in quite some time. 1-929-356-6966. And again, if you call in with the answer, or if you call in with a question, you can just leave about 5 seconds before you give us the answer, or you can email us the answer separately. But don't put it, you know, too far up. Otherwise, we'll all see the answer when the email comes in, because it always shows the first line. All right, Mark.
All right.
My last question for you is about Greek landmarks.
Okay.
Greek landmarks. What is the name of the ancient citadel that is located on a rocky outcrop above the city of Athens? What is the name of the ancient citadel that is located on a rocky outcrop above the city of Athens?
I'm just going to say something that I think it might be. When I think of landmarks in Greek, I think of the Parthenon, and I know that that's a landmark. I don't know if that's a citadel. I don't even really know what the Parthenon is, but I know it's in Greece. And so I'm going to say the Parthenon.
The Parthenon is inside the citadel. The Parthenon itself is a temple.
Oh.
It's located within the Acropolis.
Oh, the Acropolis. I've heard that word.
Yes. Yep. We had a lot of people writing down Parthenon. A little less than half our teams got that right. 47%.
Okay. Yep. It always makes me, you set my mind at ease.
Mm-hmm.
When you tell me that other people are dumb.
Yeah, if I was like, you know, Mark, 95% of our teams got that right. Oh,
fuck. And at least I got something that was inside the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Opened in 1846, Lake Compounce is the oldest continuously operating amusement park in the United States. In what state is it located?
Lake, what is it?
Compounce.
Oldest amusement park in the U.S. continuously operating. So I'm thinking it's in the Northeast. 1846. Compounce. And it's a that's such a weird name for an amusement park. Maybe it's lake based though. Now we know it is Michigan that has the most lakes of any state in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Which has got to be more than 1,000, because isn't Minnesota known as the land of 1,000 lakes?
Mm-hmm.
So Michigan's probably got like 1,001, 1,002, something.
1,003. 1,004.
So part of me wants to say Michigan just based on the number of lakes, but I just don't know about the theme park aspect. My mind is going to Pennsylvania. Because German immigration and also... you know, a lot of people there looking for something to do. They're good with mechanics and technology. Big German population in Pennsylvania, but lakes that I don't know. Are there lake? I mean, I'm sure there's a few lakes at least, but we're going up to Lake Chomp House. What was it? Compounce?
Compounce.
Compounce. Like, can you spell that for me?
C-O-M-P-O-U-N-C-E.
Just like it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know this one. I mean, obviously not Coney Island in New York. I guess I'm stuck between Michigan and Pennsylvania here. My gut and my educated guess. They say you should go with your gut. I'm going to do that. Pennsylvania.
Sorry, that's incorrect.
God, you betrayed me once again, gut. Just like when I eat dairy.
Connecticut is the correct answer.
Oh,
Lake Compounce in Connecticut.
Okay. Good to know. And there's an amusement park. It's an actual lake as well?
I don't know.
Or is it just
I'm sure it's by a lake.
Okay.
You know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, early amusement parks, you got to think that they're doing like some very basic stuff, like, you know, water skiing. Stuff like that, you know. Did they have water skiing in 1847?
I'm sure.
No pictures.
No. Not back then. They had a very,
I guess
you
they
just
did,
had to row the boat really fast.
I was going to say the boat is going so fast you can't take a picture because you need like 3 minutes to take a picture.
Yeah.
All right.
Lee.
What a great episode. 188.
I was saying it earlier. I've missed you. I feel because we did the Tuesday episode, we did it via Zoom. Mm-hmm. I like feel like I haven't been here forever.
Two weeks or so.
I haven't seen you. I haven't seen Kyle. It's wonderful to see the both of you. Wonderful to be in your abode again.
Great to have you here.
Oh, yeah. Great to be hither.
And thanks also to everybody else for listening.
Yeah, I guess you guys too.
Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways, the easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You can also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. And you can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page. Don't forget 15% off annual Patreon memberships.
Ooh.
So you can get access to all of our bonus content as well as supporting
bonus
the show
content
here throughout the year. Thank you so much.
Thank you to our Patreon supporters who are already supporting us. We appreciate you all for helping us out with the show and fending off all those advertisements, including our new Rumpelstiltskin, Kara. Oh, excuse me.
What a debut.
The name's so nice it makes me verp. Including our new Rumpelstiltskin, Kara. Thanks to our quiz daddies, Brandon Long, Issa, Adam Volk at Esme, and Red Crest Fried Chicken, Tim with Bat's Garden Service, and Tommy. Our team captains, Matt, Mo, Rick G, Skylar, Kristen, Fletcher, Jenny, Lydia, Sean, OG, Aaron, David Holbrook, and Gil.
It's Gil!
Thanks to our proverbial lightkeepers, Grant, Rob, Captain Nick Williams, Kate, Rachel Moo, Tim Gomez, a.k.a. MattB1984, Lucas, Carly, Sarah, Cooper, Hank, Luke, Manu, Matthew, Spencer, Lisa, Ryan, Adam, John Lewis, Nabil, Ricky F., Justin P.
Justin, please come back and join us as a guest soon.
And Justin M.
Justin Migrama, living on the fringe.
And thanks to our Rumpelstiltskins, Megan, Christopher, Brandon, Ed, Dylan, Sarah, Fox and Five, Laurel, Aaron, H-Bomb, Lauren, MJ, Steven, Kenya, We Do Stuff, Allison, Paige, Kevin, Sarah, Douglas, Alex, Mike C.
Mike Compact Disc Based Encyclopedia.
Mike J.
Mike Juicy Questions Only.
Mike K.
And Mike Kool-Aid. If you'd like to write us with a rate my question or miscorrection, nononsensetrivia@gmail.com, the email address, or you can call us at 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia and on Twitter at No Non Trivia.
Did you just mention Facebook?
I did.
We have a Facebook group you can join as well. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. And finally, last but not damn least, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service.
5 stars only, please. Until next time, No Nonsense listeners,
have a great week.